beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Hi, this is John Semper Jr., the head writer and producer of Spider-Man the Animated Series, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
New York City. If only everything down there was really as peaceful as it looks from up here.
Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Tooncast Beyond, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I am one of your hosts, TF John Mike, and joining me once again, as he was in our Ectastically Yours, episode 67, Eduardo, hello.
Hey, thank you for having me back.
That's right. Hell, we got a hell of a lot of attention off of episode 67 from @XTAS on Twitter. It's the, it's Julian Eric. Oh, God, I'm sorry, Julian Eric. I don't remember the last names. It's the two people that were writers or producers on X-Men the Animated Series, and I'm hoping that we can get to interview them at some point. So that was really cool. We get a lot of retweets out of them from episode 67. But today, we're going to be web-swinging along with Spider-Man and his amazing friends. No, wait, that's no. We're going to be Spectacular Spider-Man. No, that's not right either. We're going to get the Unlimited Spider-Man. No, wait, we're going to be Ultimate Spider-Man. That ain't it either. Face it, listeners, you've just hit the jackpot, because today we talk about the epically awesome Spider-Man the Animated Series from 1994. Season 1 for Spidey TAS. Oh boy. I actually, 2 years ago, because 2 years ago was the 20th anniversary of Spidey TAS, I talked with John Semper Jr. for the first time, and man, was that a fun interview. That was awesome talking to him.
So much fun that the restraining order is only 200 yards instead of 400?
I don't need a restraining order because I don't stalk celebrities. You know, I send them a request for an interview. If they say yes, great. If they say no, okay. You know, so, you know, I'm no Sheldon, thank you. There's no need for this.
Need for your mother to have you tested.
Well, I think my mom did have me tested, and I did test as crazy, so there's probably issues there. But anyway, so Spider-Man, the 1994 animated series, this was the series. This and last time's X-Men animated series, these were the two series that actually got me into wanting to read comics. I remember I used to go to the Walden Bookstore in the Kingston Independence Mall in Massachusetts, Kingston, Massachusetts, and I would just grab the comics off the racks and read them, put them back. Kind of like how Borders and Books A Million and Barnes & Noble are today, but it's one of those things where back then it was like, it wasn't that frowned upon as it is now. But yeah, no, Spider-Man the Animated Series was the show that made, because for me, like, in retrospect, I still love and will always love Batman the Animated Series, but as a 13, 14-year-old in 93, 94, trying to watch that show, and I've told this story before, my stepmother saw me watching it one day, my now ex-stepmother, and she said, "Oh, that's too violent, you can't watch that." Turned TV off, just never let me watch it again. So I'm like, okay, well, whatever. Thankfully, that'll Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God you weren't watching like anime on Toonami or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeez, so show her Akira. Let's see what she would have said then.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't even know. That's a whole other bag of worms. So Spider-Man the Animated Series is really what kind of wanted me to get into comics back then. And I, as a kid, I never really got into comics that much. I mean, I knew of comics and all that, but I never really got into them full-time until I was 32. Yeah, 2012 was the first time I really dove deep into comics. So, but growing up, Spider-Man the Animated Series, this show was amazing. The voice cast, the stories, just everything about it. It is, and I know everyone has their favorite, whether it's the Dan Gilvezan Spider-Man, whether it's the Josh Keaton Spectacular, whether it's the Drake Bell Ultimate, or even some people love what is supposedly supposed to be the sequel series to this, Unlimited, Spider-Man Unlimited. This, to me, is this will always be the definitive Spider-Man cartoon for me. What is your experience growing up with this series?
Well, I mean, yeah, I love this series too. And see, for me, I was a comics fan since before 94, definitely. I mean, I grew up on this stuff, so it was kind of a, just like with X-Men, you know, seeing this stuff on TV and, you know, seeing some of the characters that I grew up with, you know, on TV and brought to life was, you know, was just a joy for me, especially with something like Spider-Man, which kind of opened up to the greater Marvel universe. So it was kind of cool seeing Spider-Man and Punisher at the same time on screen together.
Absolutely. So we're going to go through and talk about just season one. What surprises me about this show, and this is at a time where, you know, we were just coming out of the big 80s, the big syndication era of you had to have 65 cartoon half hours for one season for syndication, so that, you know, you look at He-Man, you look at She-Ra, well, She-Ra only had 93 episodes, but you look at He-Man, you look at Thundercats, you look at Voltron,
look at the,
you know, all those.
G.I. Joe.
Yeah, G.I. Joe, Transformers, all that stuff. And looking at, you know, looking now at Spider-Man and even X-Men to a certain extent as well, these two cartoons, the first season for Spider-Man is only 13 episodes. It's like a cartoon of today, except it was 22 years ago. I mean, it, as far as, you know, having the certain episode number, because most cartoons nowadays are a 13-episode first season or whatever it is, and I did not realize this entire show was just 65 episodes. I thought it was way more than that.
Actually, yes. So did I. I thought that season one was more episodes, and then rewatching it to record for this, I was like, wait, we're done? That can't be right. It was just really weird to have that.
Yeah, it was just so strange, but it's one of those shows that it has resonated so much, and the stories play out so well, and the voice cast does so well. I know that recently John Semper Jr. had started I think he did an Indiegogo. I don't remember. One of those campaign, fundraising campaign things for his new project called War of the Rocket Men. And he basically, what he did was he basically said, hey, look, the entire cast of Spider-Man the Animated Series, at least the ones that are still living, you know, reunited and everything else. And he got Christopher Daniel Barnes and Jennifer Hale and all those people back together again to do this new project that he was doing. And that was one of the things that we talked about in the interview. And plus, just how well Spider-Man 94 holds up, honestly. I know a lot of people say, oh, but the red, it bleeds. Well, you know, that's the way animation was in the 90s. There were a lot of colors that bled. It wasn't just the red. It wasn't. For season one, we have episodes like, it starts off with Night of the Lizard. Night of the Lizard was the pilot episode, the first episode here. And it's basically the story of Kurt Connors becoming the Lizard. What did you think of this opening, rewatching it 20 years later?
You know what? Not a bad place to start. And it is interesting that we simply just have an episode of, okay, we'll have Spider-Man fighting the Lizard. We didn't have the origin all over again.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have – this was the Lizard story, not Peter Parker and the Lizard. So, you know, Peter Parker's already around. But it's also interesting because nowadays you would think that the first episode – you introduce this broader arc, this broader story, but this can be watched on its own.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry that this is episode one of some long arc that you're going to have to stick around for.
Right. Now, see, that's the cool thing. As the seasons progressed, they actually started doing that.
Yeah.
After season one. But season one essentially is, most of it is one-off episodes. There is an overall continuity to it, but like, you could sit here and watch The Sting of Scorpion or Kraven the Hunter, you know, something like that, just to get those characters. Obviously you have to watch the alien costume, all three parts, and the Hobgoblin part one and two, but I just love the overall tone of the first season. The overall tone is, it sets it up well. And you said about not having to rehash the origin.
Yeah.
The origin is essentially told in the opening animatic, opening animation, you know, in the opening theme. So you don't need a whole origin story episode. You don't need, you know, to focus on how Peter got the powers. You know,
he's an iconic enough character that we all know the story. You know, nerd in high school, goes to science exhibit, spider in radiation thing, spider land on hand, bites hand, Peter goes ouch. Goes outside. Next thing you know, he's climbing walls and going, "What the heck?"
Yep.
I mean, we don't. That's it. That's it. That's all we need. You know,
we. That's all we needed. Rehash. We didn't need. I mean, as cool as it was, in 2002, we did not need Go Web Go.
Well, hey, that was you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's thing, but that's a whole other bag of spiders. For season one, you have. The cast in this show is just amazing. They really, really are.
Oh yeah. No offense to J.K. Simmons. He did an awesome performance in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies.
Right.
But when I read a comic and I see Jolly Jonah Jameson, the voice that pops up in my head is Ed Asner.
Yeah. Yeah. Nowadays, because I've seen J.K. do so many versions of J. Jonah Jameson, it's him when I read a comic. But in the old days, all as I can think of was Ed Asner. And I know at, 2002, Ed Asner was way too old to play him. But, J.K. did such an amazing job with him.
He was a great live-action Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, and I think he really embodied in that, especially in that first movie, Tobey Maguire movie, he really embodied the spirit of the 94 animated model of JJJ. But looking at the cast, we have Christopher Daniel Barnes, like I said before, Jennifer Hale, Roscoe Lee Brown as Kingpin.
Awesome Kingpin, by the way.
Yep, one of the best.
Yeah, he for the longest time, he's been my default Kingpin voice as well. Although right now I'm toggling back and forth between him and Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the comic I'm reading. Like, if it's Frank Miller Daredevil, I'm hearing Vincent. If it's another comic, I'm hearing Roscoe Lee Brown.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know this at the time, when I was a kid watching this, but seeing that Roscoe was, because I think Roscoe has passed away since this, but he was an African-American actor. I had no idea. I just knew the voice of Kingpin and the fact that the character had always been white. But when Michael Clark Duncan came on the scene, and I know everyone, 2003 Daredevil, blah, blah. I don't care. Michael Clark Duncan reinvented that role for a generation at the time. And again, I was skeptical when they announced the new Daredevil TV Netflix series, saying, oh, who's going to play Kingpin? And then, of course, my skepticism went away when, oh, hey, it's Detective Gorin from Criminal Intent. I'm like, yeah, that works.
Yeah.
That works a lot. We also have Rodney Salisbury as Joe Robbie Robertson. We have Saratoga Ballantyne as Mary Jane Watson. We have Teela, of all people. We have Linda Gary was Aunt May. And that was one of the things, people. Go back and I'll relink the interview to the John Semper Jr. interview. I actually, when I found that out that it was Linda Gary voicing Aunt May, he actually talks about that in the interview. I was surprised at that. That was, like, I never knew who voiced Aunt May. I just knew that I liked her voice in this series. But finding out that it's Teela from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe... Wow.
Oh yeah, that is that's when I found out it was her, I was like, wait a minute, wait, that's Teela doing May? It's like my brain was trying to make the connection and it just couldn't. It was like, wait, that's, whoa, holy cow.
Yep. We also have Gary Imhoff as Harry Osborn. Joseph Campanella was Kurt Connors / the Lizard. Maxwell Caulfield was Alistair Smythe. Nick Jameson was Morbius. We got Neil Ross. Neil Ross, of all people. Commander Keith from Voltron was Green Goblin.
Commander Keith, Shipwreck from
G.I. Joe,
and Springer from Transformers.
Yep. We also have Jim Cummings as Shocker.
Although David, he was obvious. I mean, the minute he spoke, yeah, it's like, yep, there's Jim Cummings.
Yep, there's Darkwing Duck.
Yep.
You got Ra's al Ghul / Sark from Tron, David Warner as Herbert Landon. And this I did not know for the longest time because I'm only used to hearing his Alfred voice. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, no, that... it. I think by the second time I heard his voice, I was like, Alfred?
Yeah. Yeah. Another cool thing about this... Yeah. Sadly, he did. Another cool part about this animated series is you have Hank Azaria as Eddie Brock. Eddie Brock is just Mo Sizlak. You also
still with the chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, pretty much. You also have the Joker himself, Mark Hamill, as the Hobgoblin, which is interesting. Solid Snake, David Hayter, as Captain America. Who else is in this? Greg Berger was Mysterio, so we got Grimlock from Transformers being Mysterio.
That was the other voice I recognized, because he didn't use Grimlock for Mysterio, but he used one of his standard voices.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I heard that, I recognized him.
I believe I did. I recognized Astro Train as Nick Fury. Jack Angel was Nick Fury. Townsend Coleman was Silvermane, so you got Michelangelo from the Turtles being Silvermane.
Well, and the Tick. Remember, he was the voice of the Tick.
Yeah, go spoon somewhere else, Tick. You got Martin Landau as the Scorpion / Matt Gargan. That was kind of shocking. Like, looking at this cast, people, it's just amazing. It really is. I mean, Ed Gilbert as Dormammu. What's the other one on here? Paul Winfield as Black Marvel. Just the whole cast for the entire series was absolutely amazing. Out of the 13 episodes, probably my favorites are, it has to be the alien costume three-parter.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the first time I'd ever seen the whole Venom black suit Spidey thing. And the other one would probably have to be, I'm trying to think here. Probably the first episode with Mysterio. After a while, Mysterio kind of, I think after season one, episode five, The Menace of Mysterio, after I saw that, I was fine. I was great. And then I started seeing Mysterio pop up everywhere in comics as villain. I read, what was it, Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never done a podcast on that comic, but I this is right at the beginning of when I was getting into comics in 2012, I'd ask people, what's some good Daredevil stuff? Oh, Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil is good, and it turns out that it's Mysterio as the villain of that. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me! Mysterio to me has turned into nothing but a giant trope of, oh, hey, let's use the illusionist, or let's use the guy that uses illusion cubes, or what? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what I think is worse is that after a pretty awesome performance in Guardian Devil, it ends with, spoiler alert, it ends with Mysterio committing suicide.
Yeah.
And then for a while there, they tried to have this apprentice named,
right.
I think the guy's real name was Daniel Burkhart. They tried to have Burkhart doing the Mysterio bit. Then they introduced another Mysterio in this miniseries. And then it's like, oh, the original Mysterio seems to be back. And it's like, okay, what? It's just, okay, first of all, I'm confused now. Who's supposed to be Mysterio? And number two, are you telling me because somebody has a jonesing to have the original back, we're just going to say, okay, you know that part where he committed suicide? Let's just ignore that and say it's the typical comic thing of faking his death.
Yeah, let's just DC it and,
Yeah, just say it's, not even DC it. Let's just say, okay, it was a fake out, Hey, it's comics, yeah.
Yeah. What was cool to me about the voice cast is all the distinctive tones and care. These people, a lot of these people I don't see today in the voiceover industry. I don't know, maybe I'm not that in tune to current cartoons, but I don't see Christopher Daniel Barnes having, gig after gig.
I think he was, last I heard, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, I think, did their own version of the Spider-Verse story.
Yeah, and they did.
They did have, I believe they did have Dan Gilvezian and Christopher Daniel Barnes come back voicing some alternate universe Spider-Man. Not the ones that they voiced originally. It's not like Ultimate Spider
right.
Up with the Amazing Friends Spidey. They had, I think Dan was 2099, I think.
Yeah, he was 2099 because it was super dark and just completely different from his Amazing
Friends. And then I think Christopher Daniel Barnes voiced like a medieval Spidey or something.
No, I think he was noir. He was noir in the game. That's what it is.
Right, yeah, no. He was...
I'm thinking of Shattered Dimensions. I'm thinking of the game. That's what it is.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm trying not to get confused with that either. But yeah, they did bring them back. It's... Christopher Daniel Barnes, I know he was in... before he did Spider-Man, he was Prince Eric in The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, so that's
like, When I saw that he was the voice of Spider-Man and I heard his voice, I'm like, huh, Prince Eric is Spidey. I think my little sister got a kick out of that.
Talk about having two secret identities.
I'm focusing more... For me, I think, when I think of the voice cast... I think mm-hmm. of, guys like Neil Ross, Greg Berger, Jim Cummings, that group.
Yeah.
I think Jim Cummings is still working.
Oh yeah.
But some of the classic guys that we grew up with, even some people that were active about 15, 20 years ago, up to 10 years ago, I'll see their name in the credits, but it's under other voices.
Right.
They don't seem to be getting the and truth be told, I think this is kind of sad that they don't seem to be carrying these things anymore. Instead, it's like getting people who are not naturally voice actors.
like Chris Rock. Sorry.
You know, or going into the TV thing. There's a show. I forget if it's a Disney or Cartoon Network, but it's called like Wander Over Yonder.
That was Disney. Sadly, it's been canceled. Everybody's up in arms. Oh, Wander Over Yonder got canceled.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, yeah, they have, you know, the main character is voiced by Kenneth from 30 Rock, and essentially it's Kenneth from 30 Rock as this alien with the floppy hat, and it's
right.
And sometimes right. I'm just like, why? You know, it says why? You know, why not get Mike Bell and Bill Ratner and Jennifer Hale and.
Yep.
Jim Cummings and get all that group, you know, because I mean that's
well, I mean Jim keeps fairly busy because he's constantly Pooh. He does other Disney voices as well, so I mean Disney does keep Jim Cummings. He's fairly busy.
Although there's some, and I think Bill Ratner has been doing announcing work.
Yeah.
So he's still working, but as far as Spidey's concerned, I think Jennifer Hale is still working.
Yeah, she is. Most people know her now as FemShep from the what is it? Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mass Effect games. But yeah, it's, you know, it's always nice to see these people come back and do certain things. Like I remember, like I said, 2 years ago, seeing the 'cause John put up. I don't remember the link off the top of my head. He has a whole website of all various Spider-Man stuff. He put up the 20th anniversary panel they did a couple of years ago. And it's just so nice seeing all of them back together again.
Yeah.
But this show specifically, with the stories and the episodes, I know a lot of people don't like when the 2D animation mixes with the 3D animation for the buildings, but I thought it added something to it. Like, you know, when Spidey is swinging sometimes, yeah. It'll turn to that 3D shot. And I didn't see a problem with it. I thought it was really cool that they would do something like that to show definition of his action instead of just...
Yeah, and it wasn't too jarring. I mean, there were times where it did seem obvious, but it wasn't so jarring that it took you out.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite episodes from season one?
Season one, definitely the three-part alien costume.
Yeah.
Especially, one of the things I got to give kudos is that the show introduced characters like Norman Osborn, Felicia Hardy, and Eddie Brock, and then introduced them as their own people. So then when we had the thing, like for example, with the alien costume, when we had Eddie Brock become Venom, yeah, some of us who had read the comics are like, ooh, I've been waiting for this. And then others, you actually got invested in this guy. So when he became a supervillain, it's like, whoa, holy moly.
Right,
and,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, not to mention also being able to take something like Spider-Man's black costume and condense that into only a
three
handful of... three half-hour episodes. Well done. You know, I mean, I keep thinking if this was nowadays... We'd probably spend an entire season with Spidey in the black costume.
Yeah.
The whole Venom thing being the, you know, the finale. But this time it's like they were able to just get the basic parts together and we did have a full story. If there's anything about the alien costume episodes that I'm kind of, you know, have little regrets, it's that I've always been a fan of how Venom was portrayed in like his first few appearances in comics.
Right.
In the sense that he had this very weird sense of honor. You know, he hated Spider-Man and would probably want to, like, kill him by ripping him to shreds, but he was the type of thing that if he was having a full-blown fight with Spider-Man in the middle of a crowd and it looked like a baby was going to be in danger, he'd stop, save the baby, give the baby to his mother, and then just be like, where were we? You know? Because, you know, as far as he's concerned, no, Spider-Man is evil, but that baby's innocent. The baby cannot be harmed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry some of that didn't come off, but...
Well, I think the reason why it didn't come off is how they wrote Eddie.
Yeah.
Because Eddie is the second half of the Eddie is the host body for the symbiote, and it basically fed off of his anger and jealousy and basically fed off his emotions. So... with his emotions already being set up about, like, the whole scene where it's like, Peter Parker made me lose my job, my health, my apartment. You know, you know, that whole descent into, and what you're saying will actually come into those things that you say you want will actually happen as the series progresses. It doesn't happen right away, but it, you know, it needs, like, and forgive me because I'm not jumping ahead, but I don't remember if this character is in the comics. Later in the series, he meets Dr. Kafka, Ashley Kafka. So I don't know if she was a pre-existing character or if she was something that was here just for this series.
I actually I think it's one of those things where she kind of debuted simultaneously.
Okay.
Because I remember her in the comics.
So Eddie meets her, and basically meeting her changes his whole life and his whole outlook. So he does get a little softer, but...
Well, and until also that... it's an interesting variation about how he gets the symbiote, because I know in the comics he's praying in a church because he was contemplating suicide, and then in this one you still have the church, but Spidey, who was still feeling like short-tempered and, you know, not exactly friendly neighborhood, webbing him up, and then the thing just kind of oozing over him.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta say, even though you don't have that whole sort of sense of honor or like somewhat religious background, I still like the cartoon version of his origin better than the Topher Grace Eddie Brock, who...
Okay, so we have to bring this up. Yeah. We have to talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, you have the Topher Grace Venom, where the origin is Eddie Brock is in a church telling God that he wants Peter Parker smited. It's like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. What? So you brought up Spider-Man 3 because I was going to eventually.
Well,
going from
I think it's one of those things that you kind of like.
Well, because we're talking about the alien costume, so we have to bring up other versions of the alien costume. Yeah. So going from 94 to 2007. Yeah. 2000. Wow. Oh my God, that movie is 9 years old, damn! Going from 1994 to 2007 when Spider-Man 3 came out, I know everybody and their mother hates the movie, I get it. There was too many villains, too much bad writing, I get it. Tobey Maguire basically just stopped really acting well. But the cool thing for me with that movie is has nothing to do with Venom or Topher Grace or any of that kind of stuff. Nothing is how, for me, they took one of those producers, somebody on that movie watched these three episodes and saw how the animators in these three cartoons used the alien costume, black, whatever the hell it's supposed to be. Because when that shit attached to Peter Parker in Spider-Man 3, I thought it was this three-parter just coming to life, because it just looked amazing how that goop looked like it was coming to life. And I do know that Sam Raimi has said he grew up with classic Spider-Man and all that, and he wanted to be more classic than anything else, and that's fine and great. But when I saw that, I was like, oh, this is very cool. And I remember seeing those promotional trailers and stuff, not the full trailers, but just like the TV spots of him waking up on the building and looking around and just seeing that black suit in live action on Spider-Man himself was just so cool. The rest of Spider-Man 3, yeah. Who cares if Lowell from Wings was Sandman? Nobody.
Okay.
Well, what?
Hey. Well, no. I thought that at first. I thought the casting choice was honestly Lowell from Wings as Sandman. That I'm not mad at him. I'm not mad at him.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
If the writing had been better, probably would have been a cool. You know, he probably would have done a great job. But it's just the writing on that movie and.
Yeah, don't get me wrong.
I think the Venom needed to wait for it. Was kind of cool seeing the whole symbiote like flow over Peter, but just This is like subject for another podcast, especially.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I need prep work because I need to be able to articulate. Yeah. Not.
And I don't see. I don't necessarily blame any of the actors in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah,
but you know, the Spider-Man 3 is essentially Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen. It's really what it is.
You know what? Yeah, let's go with that.
But, you know, it's one of those things where the writing could have been a hell of a lot better, but certain aspects of that movie, certain looks and things, you know, reminded me, obviously, of the alien costume. The alien costume episodes were just so cool within this series. Yeah. Like,
to jump to another episode, mentioned Nick Fury earlier.
Right.
That episode, Day of the Chameleon, I like that one too.
Yeah, that one's a good one.
Yeah, and I actually gotta give, you know, we spoke about voice acting. I gotta give kudos for the idea where in all of Chameleon's appearances, when he's his standard self, he's never spoken.
Right.
I mean, did you notice that? You know, like in Day of the Chameleon, the only time he spoke was when he was disguised as someone.
Yeah, in character.
And I think that added, as cheesy as his standard costume was in the animated series, I thought the fact that he never spoke added this interesting layer to the character. You know, it kind of reinforced this idea that he's somebody who becomes other people.
Yeah.
So why would he have his own voice? Because that's not what he's about.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the cool thing about this, and this is something that this is a story I will tell all the time.
Like now.
When talking about this series specifically, it took me a while to learn that the theme song, including the lyrics, were done by Joe Perry of Aerosmith.
That would explain the metal quality of it.
Yes. The rest of the music, the orchestral background stuff, was done by Shuki Levy and Ham Saban. So, Saban Brands. Yay! Which, those guys, those two, Levy and Saban, I had no idea they did most of the He-Man stuff, too.
Yep.
Like, all the He-Man music, because I actually have that released from Lawline Records. But anyway, the theme song, specifically, done by Joe Perry, because I'm originally from Massachusetts, and so is Aerosmith. My mom used to date a guy, but you know, when she was still alive, she used to date a guy that he owned a dry cleaners in Marshfield, Massachusetts, and Joe Perry was a regular customer of my mom's ex's dry cleaners. So that was just so. I never actually saw Joe come into the store, but I mean, yeah. But that is always a story I tell. But the music in this is one animated series. This and X-Men both are two animated series that definitely need CD soundtrack releases from La La Land Records, because it would just be awesome to have that music on disc.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, I noticed that there were two versions of the Spider-Man theme. The one with the lyrics that's in the opening, and then I could swear that the closing music was the Spider-Man theme, but minus the lyrics.
I think so. It's probably an instrumental, most likely.
Yeah, but I mean, it works as an instrumental, and it's actually seriously metal when you have the.
Well, most of the instrumentals for cartoon shows from the 80s and 90s were for the closing shows. You know, you look at, like, at, you know, Transformers, G.I. Joe, He-Man, Thundercats, that kind of stuff. That was all just instrumental music, whether they had a sung opening or not. And the same thing for the 90s. Spider-Man Season 1. Again, I just can't believe, like, how short it is. That it's only 13 episodes. I'm not complaining about it, but because I remember because this is one whole continuous thing as these five seasons go along. So I just remember it folding nice, Day of the Chameleon folding nicely into the first part of Neogenic Nightmare in season two. And I, so far, I've actually, I was on a Spider-Man kick a few months ago, and it just got added, the whole series just got added to Hulu Plus. So I'm like, hey, let's watch. And I'm like on season three, episode one at this point. So we're all set for the season two podcast. But yeah, I mean, season one, it was set up so well. The writing is so well done. Absolutely love it. I don't know what else we can say about it. It's just so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, not as, I did notice that it wasn't as dark or as serious as X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little,
I mean, there are dark moments in it, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's,
no, it wasn't as, you know, it had a lighter, in general, it had a lighter tone than, yeah, than X-Men the Animated Series.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's because most of the Spider-Man stuff, I mean, Spider-Man comics, since they began in 62, have had various light and dark tones. But overall, you know, the whole shtick of Spider-Man is he's a kid just trying to make it kind of thing. And it's you know, he's a kid, you know, it's not like, you know, X-Men where, you know, Jean Grey and Cyclops are 20/30-somethings who, you know, Cyclops can't keep his emo-ness to himself. And
well, then again, when, you know, then again, when you have to wear glasses or goggles all the time, lest you vaporize what you're looking at, you know, that...
Yeah, that's true.
That could cause someone's mood to sour. But yeah. But yeah, and, you know, what did you... Here's an interesting question that I wanted to ask. What did you think of Peter Parker's outfit, like at least in season one? He had like this horizontal striped kind of green shirt, and you know, it's I gotta admit, it's not Parker with the sweater vest and the bow tie, but and yeah, no glasses, but it's still, to me, it still worked. I mean, he wasn't dressing, you know, I mean, he's a nerd, he's a geek, you know, he's not supposed to be one of the popular people. So, and the outfit that he wore, you know, when he wasn't Spider-Man, I think kind of reflected that, you know.
And I think as the series goes on, we will see him in various other clothing, but he'll always have that green and the teal and purple thing or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's all right. Sad thing is, when I was a kid, my mom used to... I'm sorry, folks. No parents ever, 30 years ago or even today, should dress their children in horizontal striped anything.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of horizontal stripes. Although, if there's anything that I do want to... if there's anything I do want to continually criticize my parents for, it wasn't so much the clothes, it was the fact that for the longest time I had a bowl cut.
Oh,
yeah.
Would you like a spoon with that bowl?
Ugh, God, that was just the biggest problem is there were times it made my ears look big.
Oh boy, yeah, and I know we're all over the place here, folks, but for me, the haircut I always wanted was after I saw a certain 1990 movie as a 10-year-old. I saw Dick Tracy. I'm like, yep, I want a flat top the rest of my life because I love flat top. Okay, so Spider-Man, the Animated Series, Season 1, it's just so damn good, even after all this time. Not, you know, the animation is very well done. The stories are just so, you can tell that John Semper Jr. and his writing team had an amazing time. And, you know, like I said, when I talked to him, he told me that, you know, he basically grew up on the early Spider-Man comics, and you can tell that this is his love letter to Spider-Man. I've got a couple of questions here on the how does the show stack up? And one of them is, how does the show compare to other shows within the same franchise? Well, I already listed earlier. So we got Spider-Man 67, which I don't think I've ever seen maybe one or two episodes of Spider-Man 67, We got Amazing Friends. We got Unlimited. We got the MTV 2003 version with Neil Patrick Harris as Spider-Man.
Never saw that one at all.
That was 3D all kinds of wrong. It was kind of, they were trying to capitalize on the first movie. MTV tries to capitalize on anything other than television. Okay. So. And then we got Spectacular Spider-Man, and we got Ultimate Spider-Man is the current series. For me personally, I have not seen all of Spectacular Spider-Man. I know I want to eventually, but the way that that had been released on DVD, I'm hoping that, seeing as how Hulu now has a lot of the Marvel stuff on there, I'm hoping they eventually get that, because they have this show.
Wasn't Spectacular done by Greg Weissman?
Yes.
And that explains it. It's like, okay. And now we figured out why it's having such a tough time. It's apparently the universe has it out for Greg Weissman as far as cartoons written by him.
Well, plus it was a Cartoon Network show, and as we all know, there, you know, there are cartoon Nazis on Cartoon Network. All right, so we got this one, we got 67, His Amazing Friends, Unlimited, Ultimate, Spectacular. That's six. Out of the six, how does this stack up to the other five?
Ooh. Well, okay, of the ones I've seen, I would stack it up. I would stack it up as number one.
Yeah.
I've seen little pieces of Ultimate Spider-Man, and hey, it's not a bad show. Spectacular. Yeah, I mean, it's Greg Weissman. He's good, you know, really good. I just kind of wish he would have been able to finish all the, you know, all the stuff that he had planned. 67, I did see it as a kid, and I know I saw it as a kid. That's all I know.
The rest of it
is just a blur. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and the Spider-Man cartoon from the 80s. I mean, yeah, they're 80s. They're not bad. They're just pure 80s. And although I got to give Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends props, because that's how we got the X-Men. We also had other Marvel characters show up. So, you know, I give it a little thumbs up for that. But, oof. But yeah, this would definitely be like the top, like the number one slot.
Yeah, same for me. All right, how would you say it stacks up against shows in the same superhero genre? So Spider-Man, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Hulk, X-Men, Batman, Superman, Justice League, Batman Beyond, that kind of stuff.
Oh, Lord. Okay, now that starts to get a little tough. If we keep it in the Marvel wheelhouse,
okay,
I put it at number two. X-Men at number one, Spider-Man at number two, and then the other three, it's kind of tough. I think I would it would probably be Fantastic Four, Hulk, Iron Man.
Ooh, see, for me, it's the top five would be Spider-Man. Well, technically, Spidey and the X-Men, Spider-Man and XTAS would tie for number one, because I love them both for separate reasons. But if I'm really forced to put the five categories, Spider-Man number one, X-Men number two, I have to say Iron Man number three, Fantastic Four number four, and Hulk number five. Hulk was just so horrible.
I think first season was pretty good. Second season, once they decided to make She-Hulk like a sidekick, that's where it got lost.
Yeah, that's
where they lost it.
Yeah. Well,
Avengers United They Stand.
That's not even in the same league as the other.
That was just god.
That's about as on par as Lunatics.
I never saw that, and there's a part of me that is perfectly okay with that.
I can send you a link and destroy your childhood.
Destroy my childhood. At most, what will happen is I'll try to find somebody who worked on that, just stare at the ask for explanations.
Oh, boy.
Like, why do this again? Why? Why? Who asked for this? Because I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for this. Did you ask for this? Why'd you ask for this? I didn't ask for this.
They were trying to be edgier, and they were trying to go street, and apparently
don't. Just My advice is don't ever do that.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that. Don't please. It's like if I'm in a meeting and somebody goes, but can we go edgy? I'd be like, please tell me you just did not say that. Please don't do that. Don't. I hate it when people say that. It's like no, we can't go edgy.
There's a comic that I read all the time. It's called. It's by Tom Zoller. How do I get? It's by Tom Zoller. It's called Long Distance. It's a 4-issue miniseries comic story, all wrapped up into 4 issues. It's about this couple who are in a long distance relationship, and the guy that's in the relationship, Carter. He says. He works for his own ad agency kind of thing. So he does ads, like print ads and that kind of stuff. And he's a comic artist. So he's like, yeah, he sent all the client sent all this stuff back. How am I supposed to draw this 6-year-old more edgier? And I'm like, oh, God. So the final question we have on the ballot here is, which show from a previous decade is this show most comparable to? For Spider-Man the Animated Series, as just on merits of being an action cartoon, I would say it's comparable to Thundercats, Voltron, He-Man, pretty much any of the action cartoons of the 80s. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, I would not really compare it to anything per se.
No.
But if you put a gun to my head and said, make a comparison, I'd say, okay, yeah, the stuff of the 80s. If anything, just like with X-Men, the Animated Series, and Batman, just taking things and then kicking it up a notch.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we started at this place. Now it's gone up.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
That's pretty much how I would put it. You know, it's improving on what came before.
Yeah. All right, so... We got to give the season a rating on a scale of 0 to 5 stars. What would you rate season 1?
Season 1, I would say 3.5 to 4.
All right. For me, I would have to say I'm probably right there with you. I'll go 4. I really did enjoy it. Once it got to the alien costume stuff, I thought that was great. There are certain things about it that I don't really care for that I didn't really mention earlier, but stuff like the whole Scorpion episode, that's one of my least favorite episodes of season 1. Just because I know JJ's an ass and he's supposed to be an ass, but he's more of an ass in that episode than almost the entire rest of the series.
Yeah, I kind of... You know, it would... I don't know if any of the other cartoons have done this, but I would really love to see somebody in a Spider-Man adaptation doing, like, an interpretation of this scene from early in the Spider-Man comics where Jameson is alone in his office, like, nobody's there, and he actually admits that his hatred is petty.
Yeah.
Like, he actually has this moment of clarity where he's like, what am I doing?
You right.
Know, I'm used, you know, God help me, I'm just being this hateful SOB. Is this really what I want to do? Like, it's this tiny little moment where he's thinking about, you know, maybe I'm wasting my time. You know, this brief, fleeting moment where, you know, maybe JJ will just stop being such a jerk, but it's like, nope, didn't last, but... You know, I kind of wish we'd have something like that, you know, with kind of saying, I'm getting too old for this. You know, why am I spending my time like this?
Yeah. For the when and where kind of stuff, I don't think, I could be wrong, I don't think Disney has ever done this. I know they did this with X-Men. X-Men has gotten a complete series DVD set. X-Men,
TAS. I don't think Spider-Man has ever, I think Spider-Man has gotten like maybe... A couple he's of gotten single, DVDs.
Yeah, he's gotten like one-off DVDs. Right now, as of this recording, July 19th, 2016, it is on Hulu Plus. So if you guys use streaming services, if you use Hulu Plus, if you pay $11.99 a month for ad-free Hulu, You can watch all 65 episodes completely legal and not have to find it through other unmentionable means. So there's that. We're going to take a quick break, come back to close the show, and tell you what's coming up next on Tooncast Beyond after this.
They don't look like they're headed for night school. It's not nice to rob jewelry stores in Mr. Spider-Man's neighborhood. Can you say, I'm going to jail?
What happened to jail?
I know what we're doing today.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the GeekCast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
Okay, then. Carry on.
Found you, Spider, at last.
We are back here on Tooncast Beyond, episode 68. Final thoughts on Spider-Man, the animated series, sir?
Well, hey, it definitely an animation classic, and it needs like a proper multi-season DVD release.
Yep.
You know, get Christopher, really, you know, get Christopher Daniel Barnes, Ed Asner, you know, and anybody you can, do some commentary, do some interviews, you know. Mm. Heck, call up anybody who's left alive who did the comics, you know, and do like a compare and contrast.
Yep, absolutely. For me, I love season one, but for me, it's really the whole... I view the series as a whole most of the time because all the stories are just so interconnected after season one. But season one especially, I just absolutely love it. It was the first time... I fell in love with her a little bit more once the Black Cat story happened, but I am sorry. Felicia Hardy, Jennifer Hale as Felicia Hardy. Oh my God. I mentioned earlier about John Semper Jr.'s Indiegogo thing for his War of the Rocket Men project, bringing back all the original cast that are still around. And Jennifer Hale was one of them. He did a YouTube ad or a YouTube promo thing with Black Cat and Harry Osborn. So Jennifer Hale and Gary Imhoff. Where Gary walks in and she's talking about doing the Black Cat voice and the sexy Black Cat voice, and she actually calls up Stan Lee. We don't actually hear Stan, but she calls him up and has him come over, move her couch and whatever else, and she, at the end of the promo, she says, "Oh, thanks, Stan." She kisses him and he faints. She goes, "Oh, I guess the kiss was a little too much." I'll have to send you that so you can listen to it. But it's just one of those things where, oh, God, Jennifer Hale is Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat. That was the epitome of vocalization for me. So just absolutely love that. We will be doing seasons 2 through 5 at some point.
Spider!
Thank goodness. You're only stunned.
Blast! He got away! Because of you! What were you thinking? You risked both our lives for this?
I couldn't let an innocent creature be destroyed. Don't you care about anybody anymore?
That's just the problem. I don't think I do.
Wait.
I don't know why you want to be a crime fighter, but take my advice. In the end, you'll regret it. Big time!
I wish I could tell him why I want to be a crime fighter. It's not just for me.
So yes, folks, sexy Black Cat. For me, it's always been Jennifer Hale. It'll always be Jennifer Hale. I can't even talk at this point. I just can't. Oh, the outtakes for this episode are going to be hilarious, folks. the podcast. But Jennifer Hale. Wake up.
Hale, Jennifer, like the weather phenomena.
There we go. Jennifer Hale, there we go, enunciate, there we go, as Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat, was the first superhero female crush I really had at the age of 14, and her sexy Black Cat voice was just absolutely amazing. As you can tell by how this podcast has kind of ended, it always leaves me tongue-tied. The comic I was talking about was the Return of the Black Cat story, which I forget the issue numbers of the Amazing Spider-Man run that that collects, but that's what I was talking about. So,
well, if you want like another really nice looking sexy Black Cat picture, I can't remember the issue right off the top of my head. I'd have to dig into my comic boxes for this, but there is a 90s Spider-Man story where the Black Cat kind of helps Spider-Man out, but at the time she unveils her new costume and she's kind of balancing on the Parker's couch, you know, has it tilted over a bit, and she's showing how well the costume helps her balance, and that's opening splash page is just like, hi, you know,
yeah,
hi there,
it's like boing, hello.
hello kitty cat,
yes, purr for us please. So thank you for joining us here on Tooncast Beyond. No, this is not Tooncast Classic. Tooncast Classic has been dead for 5 years. Tooncast Beyond, there are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, the all-new geekcastradio.com. Stop on by and check out our all-new format of our main page and all the cool stuff our new theme affords us. Be sure to leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter, at Tooncast Beyond is the show Twitter. You can follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Mine is at TFG1Mike. What is your spelled out Twitter?
Well, it's supposed to be pronounced White Balloon King, but it's spelled WHTBLLNKING. Because Twitter limits the amount of letters you can use in your ID. Darn it.
Yeah, they do.
Darn it.
You'd think that they'd be, you know, they've been around for, what, 8 years now? 9 years now, you'd think that they'd stop doing that. But anyway, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. There is a 5-minute time limit you can call. 502-526-5821.
Yep, Jennifer Hale, you can call him at any time.
Thankfully, I have my own Jennifer for that now.
Oh, there you go. I have a Trish, so... You have Black you Cat, I have Hellcat.
Oh, what a combination. So, what have you got coming up? Anything you want to pimp out?
You know, actually, yeah, there are things I want to pimp out, but I'm kind of under under a gag order, but I do have stuff coming up.
Cool.
I just finished a run on stage for a version of Macbeth called Maxbeth, which was the classic Shakespearean Scottish play, but set in Mad Max times. We killed it. I mean, we had full crowds. Everybody seemed to love it. I gotta be honest, ever since we stopped, there are weekends where I'm like, I want to be on stage again.
Yeah, I can imagine. That sounds awesome. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond, and wish you'll join us next time when we'll be giving you our thoughts in episode 69, TV's Mr. Neil is going to join me for Stripperella the series. Because it only had one season.
You did that on purpose.
Well, okay, so Tooncast Classic, the original Tooncast Classic podcast, episode 69 was Johnny Bravo, so I had to find some way to get a female version of a 69 in here. And of course I did that on purpose. And, of course, now I'm going to get a bunch of iTunes reviews saying that we're sexist. Oh, God. iTunes people. Anyway.
Welcome to the...
So, yeah. Stripperella, the series, because it only had one season. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Eduardo M. Fryer.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep swinging on those webs, folks.
And maybe more. Catch you later, Spider.